good Monday and welcome to the Maya Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. Today is a Maya Ag Life and Almonds episode, and Taylor Charleston will be in with a report on a sterile insect technology project from the University of California Riverside's Houston Wilson during his conversation on the Growing the Valley podcast. More information on that is available at growingthevalleypodcast.com. And stay tuned for regional and national agricultural news with me, and I'll start with regional ag news right after this.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
The California Department of Food and Agriculture is continuing to accept applications for the 2023 Specialty Crop Block Grant Program Technical Review Committee through 5 p.m. on Friday, September 28th. The TRC plays a vital role in the program and is comprised of volunteers with knowledge and expertise regarding California's specialty crop industry. The committee reviews, evaluates, and makes recommendations to CDFA on proposals submitted for funding through the California's Specialty Crop Block Grant Program. TRC members are responsible for reviewing and providing feedback on 6 to 15 proposals and attending two meetings held virtually to discuss final proposal scoring with fellow TRC members. TRC members gain insight into the Specialty Crops Block Grant Program selection process and help to prioritize funding to ensure that it aligns with the needs of the California specialty crop industry. People who are interested in submitting a completed application must also submit a resume or CV. You can do so by emailing grants@cdfa.cda.gov. Again, those are due by 5 p.m. on Friday, September 28th. More information can be found at the California Department of Food and Agriculture website or by calling 916-657-3231. The Sonoma, Marin Ag, and County Climate Coalition project has tentatively been awarded a national grant to promote successful carbon farming, as well as forge regional and local food partnerships to boost climate-smart agricultural products. This grant was tentatively awarded through the Partnerships for Climate-Smart Commodities by the Natural Resources Conservation Service, part of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The amount of the grant is still being negotiated by the USDA and project partners, but the estimated funding ceiling for the project is $10 million. If a full $10 million grant is awarded, the project could support up to 100 farms and ranches and reduce hundreds of thousands of metric tons of carbon dioxide emissions over the next 20 years of the project benefits. The County of Sonoma would act as the lead entity for the project, which would also include Marin County. One of the objectives would be to create a regional supply chain, tracking system, and market campaign for agricultural commodities produced using farming, ranching, or forestry practices that reduce greenhouse gas emissions in agriculture. This would be designed to help achieve the ambitious climate mitigation goals established in formal county climate action planning documents. Sonoma Ag and County Climate Coalition Project provides a regional approach to creating a climate-resilient agricultural landscape through local partnerships and the engagement with the agricultural community. This pilot project would build upon long-standing partnerships among county governments, resource conservation districts, University Extension Service, Climate and Agriculture Center community-based organizations, and the USDA to support, monitor, and verify the implementation of the impactful climate-smart practices. The project would also build upon the partners' online database system to track project implementation, impacts, and costs. It is a five-year project. Through the USDA, the Biden-Harris administration is investing up to $2.8 million in 70 selected projects under the first pool of the Partnerships for Climate Smart Commodities funding opportunity. Taylor Farms, North America's largest producer of healthy fresh foods, has partnered with Bloom Energy Amoresco Incorporated and Concept Clean Energy to install a microgrid capable of taking one of their California food processing facilities completely off the traditional energy grid. The energy leaders plan to combine 6 megawatts of Bloom fuel cells, 2 megawatts of solar power from Concept Clean Energy, and 2 megawatts and 4 megawatt batteries into a microgrid that is designed to power the entire 450,000 square foot facility in San Juan Bautista, California. Taylor Farms' commitment to providing healthy, fresh foods year round to customers and consumers cannot be disrupted amid energy reliability challenges. This collaboration combines the strength of each technology, fuel cells' ability to generate resilient, always on power, daytime power generation from solar and energy storage benefits from batteries to fulfill the facility's 24/7 power needs completely, independently, and cost-effectively. While microgrids are often implemented only to provide power to critical loads in the event of outages, Taylor Farms seeks to prove that the companies can take control of all their energy needs and establish price and power predictability. Per the California Independent System Operator, it is estimated that the state faces an energy capacity shortfall of 1,700 megawatts, which could be as high as 5,000 megawatts if California is hit with multiple extreme events at the same time, such as wildfires and heat waves. With the flexibility to leverage the right technology for the right application, companies can now avoid relying on strained power grids, as Bloom Energy and Ameresco aim to provide always-on power for Taylor Farms. This journey builds on Taylor Farms' relationship with Bloom Energy and is intended to allow the produce distributor to explore disconnecting from the regional power grid amid energy price escalations and reliability challenges. Energy solutions, including fuel cells and solar, can be integrated at scale to provide low-carbon energy, reliability, resiliency, and immunity to challenges facing current grid operations. According to the grape cold storage summary from the Western Fruit Report, as of September 15th, there were 40,510 bags of autumn royal grapes in cold storage in California. That number stood at 325,679 bags for autumn crisps and 253,432 bags of autumn kings, respectively. Together with all stored Scarletta, Allison, Jack Salute, and Scarlet Royal grapes, all packagings, the total number stored came out at 1,495,725 packages.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
Time for the Maya Ag Life and Almonds Report with Taylor Chalstrom.
Improvements in handling and releasing sterile navel orangeworm moths have been in the works for the Sterile Insect Technique Program, funded by the California Pistachio Research Board and the Almond Board of California. The project, which has been aimed at area-wide suppression of navel orangeworm, is using aerial releases of sterilized NOW to overwhelm wild populations of NOW and lower reproduction rates for the insect pest. When a sterile moth mates with a wild moth, no viable offspring are produced. Mass rearing and irradiation of NOW is carried out by USDA Avis in a facility located in Phoenix, Arizona that was initially developed for another moth pest, the pink bollworm. With the eradication of pink bollworm in 2018, efforts were initiated to reconfigure the facility for NOW, and shortly thereafter, the almond industry joined in. Houston Wilson, a UC Riverside Cooperative Extension specialist who's leading this ongoing research program, spoke with Tree Nut advisors Luke Milliron and Phoebe Gordon on their Growing the Valley podcast about how the program is going.
For the past 5 years now, we've been working on identifying where the bottlenecks are and how to improve those so that we can make this a effective practice that could be used by growers in addition to, you know, all the normal management practices for navel orangeworm. So crop sanitation, mating disruption, well-timed sprays, and timely harvest, you could potentially add into that mix sterile insect techniques. So, you know, kind of a two-part thing, trying to figure out how to optimize the performance of these sterile moths, and then also trying to understand how this technology is integrated with the other practices that are available to growers.
Since the sterile NOW usually have to be transported far distances from the Phoenix facility, Wilson said one area of focus has been evaluating their ability to recover from exposure to various levels of chilling, which is necessary to keep them settled during irradiation and transport.
We try to hold them at a cold temperature that's cold enough so that they are immobilized, but not so cold that it actually damages the insect. And that's kind of a really fine line that you're trying to achieve there. So that's one area of inquiry that we're currently pursuing. The transportation, we've also manipulated that to try out a couple different transportation systems that have active versus passive cooling systems and different kind of customized versus a commercial standard carrier to see if there's differences there in their performance after going through that sort of transportation system. And then we've also been looking at the release method. So when we initially were releasing them using sort of a horizontal surface, basically a large dish or tray that we would put the moths on, they didn't seem to want to disperse from that very much. We subsequently developed another system that provides more vertical space for the moths to rest on, and they seem to more frequently disperse out of that. The downside is that that system isn't really practical to scale commercially, but it was, you know, showing a proof of concept that there's something about, you know, how you move these things into the field even really has an impact on how they perform. And so we've done a lot of work over the past few years looking at the use of a drone to release the moths, and we have seen pretty good recovery when we release them with one of these drones. Again, there's a lot of questions about how to scale this and all that, but still just trying to hone in on what are the key areas that need to be further refined to optimize the performance of this moth. So as we made these changes in the release and the transportation system, we were able to see improved recovery. And that started in 2019 and in 2020, we really saw some significant gains and felt like we had figured out, you know, ways to tweak this process so that we can improve their performance. And recovery is one issue. So will the moth fly to a wing trap baited with a pheromone or with an ovibait lure? You know, yes, we can see that it will do that. And the rate at which, you know, we're able to recover moths definitely varies with how they're handled and released.
Another focus for Wilson and the researchers were mating tables, which is another measure of the naval orangeworm's performance in the orchard.
What a mating table is effectively, it's a little sort of platform that we put out into the tree canopy, and we have a virgin female naval orangeworm with her wings clipped so she can't escape this little platform we put her in. And we put a number of these out in the orchard in the evening, and then we can come back the following morning to see if they've mated with a moth or not. You can dissect them and actually see evidence of them having mated. And the way we structured our work, you would actually check these traps at dawn when the moths would still be actively mating. So you could actually not just look at mating success, but actually dissect the males as well to understand whether or not it was a sterile or a wild male that was showing up in these tables. And we conducted a whole series of experiments, some of which were focused on the ability of the sterile males to find what we call a sentinel female, these sentinel virgin females we were setting out. And then we also did a number of experiments looking at the ability of the sterile females to effectively call and mate with wild males. And what we saw was that the steriles are able to both locate and mate with or call and mate with females and males respectively, but they still are doing this in sort of a suboptimal fashion. So again, when we take a locally reared, gently handled moth who's kind of given the best chance at performing, we get a certain rate of mating success with that. And these mass reared moths, while they do mate, they're not doing it as successfully as sort of like our local control moth. And so, you know, again, it's on some level good to just see recovery of the moths in our traps and good to see that they're able to mate with wild moths. But of course, for this program to be effective, we really need to get that as close as possible to what the performance would be of a wild moth. So there's still ongoing work to better refine this production, transportation, and release process. So, you know, step one, I think, was just simply showing that these things could, you know, follow pheromones and mate and all that. And the next step was to see, you know, where the key bottlenecks are in the current process that we really need to focus on. And now we're sort of in this third phase where we know where the problems lie, and we're really going in to develop new processes to improve the performance of this system.
Most recently, a new strain of moth has been developed by USDA to tolerate all of these conditions.
Basically ran moths through their system, and the ones that basically made it through on the other end and survived, they kept breeding that line, and then they'd run them through again and then breed them and run them through again. And so kind of through like forced natural selection, trying to develop a strain of moth that can tolerate all the processes that take place in this facility. I've mentioned the cold temperatures. There's also a vacuum collection system that is used that as the moths emerge, they're pulled into these vacuums and moved into these aggregation chambers where they're then held at a cold temperature and then irradiated and moved on to the release, the transport and release process. So there's definitely some opportunity for damage physically, you know, to take place as they move through that vacuum system. And this summer at Kearney, comparing the field performance of this new strain with the older strain. So doing many similar experiments as we've done in the past where we release the moths, we look at recovery rates. We also run some laboratory assays to look at their performance and another sort of performance test that we give them. And it's been exciting to see that this new strain has indeed been performing better. We're recovering about twice as many of these moths as we are compared to the older strain that's traditionally been used. So, you know, again, identifying bottlenecks, troubleshooting those and seeing improvements in field performance.
In order to test the true viability of this practice, Wilson and the researchers are currently testing the moths in larger, more commercial style orchard settings. To hear more on this update from Wilson, go check out the Growing the Valley podcast at www.growingthevalleypodcast.com. For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
The show continues with national agricultural news right after this. I'm Lori Boyer.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
U.S. rice imports for the 2022 to 2023 marketing year, August through July, are projected to rise 16% from a year earlier and to reach the highest volume on record at 44 million hundredweight. USDA's Economic Research Service reports that imported rice is also projected to account for almost 32% of domestic use of rice in 2022 to 2023, the highest share on record. Imports of long grain and the combined classes of short and medium grain rice are projected at all-time highs. For long grain rice, growing consumer preference for Asian aromatic rice such as jasmine rice from Thailand has increased import purchases. In addition, the United States has been importing a much smaller volume of regular milled long grain rice from South American suppliers. Increasing imports are spurred by reduced production in California, where a second consecutive year of drought has reduced the size of the rice harvest. The California rice crop is forecast down 38% from a year earlier and is expected to be the smallest crop since 1977 to 1978. The Department of Agriculture will invest $178 million in 7 international development projects on 4 continents to support U.S. government priorities. The projects include promoting climate-smart agriculture, facilitating trade, and addressing the root causes of migration in Central America. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack announced the funding last week and says by partnering with private sector organizations, local governments, and local producers and businesses, they are helping to build more equitable and resilient food systems. Through Food for Progress, USDA donates U.S. agricultural commodities to eligible entities such as private voluntary organizations and foreign governments, which then sell the commodities on the local market and use the proceeds to support agricultural, economic, or infrastructure development programs. USDA will donate 240,000 metric tons of commodities this year, valued at $129.6 million. The 7 new Food for Progress projects funded by USDA in 2022 are in addition to the 41 projects currently underway in 38 countries. Older Generation Zs, ages 18 to 24 in the United States, are discerning when choosing restaurants, according to new data by the NPD Group. Although price matters to this group, their taste preferences and definition of value dictate the type of restaurants they visit. As a result, Gen Zs skew towards quick service restaurants, particularly fast casual, that balance value and a focused menu. In the 12 months ending July of 2022, Gen Zs made 5 billion restaurant visits, 4.3 billion visits were to quick service restaurants, and 736 million were to full service restaurants. Overall, quick service traffic was flat compared to a year ago, while Gen Zs fast casual visits were up 4% in the period compared to a year ago. Gen Zs favor major fast casual restaurants that provide the menu items they want, value for the money, and messaging that reflects their interests like organics and sustainability, according to NPD's recently released Winning Gen Z Consumer Study. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack says that the lack of access to adequate internet service is putting millions of rural residents at a disadvantage.
Many parts of the country today still have limited internet access in terms of upload and download speeds that simply don't allow for multiple uses in a home, don't accommodate distance learning or telemedicine, and don't allow businesses to expand market opportunities and would not allow farmers the opportunity of precision agriculture.
USDA Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack. 15 Republican members of the U.S. House of Representatives have renewed calls for the Environmental Protection Agency and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to delay any new rulemaking on waters of the U.S., asking the heads of the agencies last week to allow the Supreme Court to issue a ruling in an upcoming Clean Water Act case. In a letter to EPA Administrator Michael Reagan and Michael L. Connor, Assistant Secretary of the Army for Civil Works, the members of the Water Resources and Environment Subcommittee also pointed to a recent Supreme Court decision that now limits the EPA's authority to regulate greenhouse gas emissions as a reason to allow Congress to redefine WOTUS. The House members have asked the agencies to provide to the subcommittee by October 4th a list of expected and pending WOTUS rulemakings from the agencies. So far in 2022, the agencies have proposed and finalized just one WOTUS rule, returning to the pre-2015 WOTUS definitions ahead of an eventual rewrite. The Supreme Court is hearing oral arguments on October 4th in the Michael Sackett versus EPA case. This case could determine to what degree the agencies would be allowed to regulate wetlands. Clean Fuels Alliance America has announced the appointment of Jonathan Martin as its first director of economic and market analytics. Martin, most recently an economist with Marathon Petroleum Company, brings 10 years of experience in oil and gas corporate economics to this newly created role. He will be based in Ohio. Well-versed in synthesizing and analyzing data, Martin is strategically positioned to support Clean Fuel in economic analysis of planning and policy decisions. Martin holds a bachelor's degree in chemical engineering.
The Crop Consultant Conference returns on September 28th and 29th in Visalia, California. Co-hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and the Western Region Certified Crop Advisors Association, this two-day conference features two concurrent CE tracks for both PCAs and CCAs. Earn the DPR and CCA credits you need. Network on our trade show floor and join us in giving away scholarships and honorariums presented by Western Region CCA, including the CCA of the Year Award. Visit progressivecrop.com/conference.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.